Support for the Source podcast comes from UT Health San Antonio, South Texas' largest academic research institution, where what is discovered in its labs translates into life-changing patient care. More at groundbreakingresearch.org.
Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Magic mushrooms are psilocybin mushrooms. They contain the hallucinogenic compound that alters perception, mood, and cognition. They have been used historically in spiritual rituals, but have gained modern interest for their potential therapeutic benefits, particularly in treating depression, PTSD, and addiction. However, their legal status is controversial, as it's classified as a Schedule I substance by the federal government. There are risks, included psychological stress, bad trips, unpredictable effects, making safety and ethical concerns paramount in their use. But that doesn't seem to be slowing down growing interest in mushrooms. Eugenia Bone has written a book, Have a Good Trip, Exploring the Magic Mushroom Experience. And Eugenia, welcome to The Source.
Thank you, David. I'm so happy to be on.
And I want to mention that you are an acclaimed journalist, food writer, author, and expert in the field of fungi. You have great credentials. You're not like a parachute journalist who just dropped in on this issue. This is something that you know extremely well, and I think that makes a big difference when you read a book like this. And I want to get straight to the disclaimer that you have in the book, okay? Because it really helps us put in some guideposts. You're saying that this book is informational, educational purposes only, should not be construed as an advocacy for the use of any illegal substance. You go on to talk about that this is an illegal drug under the U.S. federal law, and that this is something that people should use responsibly. Was this disclaimer, was this something that the lawyers wanted to put in there, or did you want to put that in there?
Well, the lawyers did that language, but, you know, I had done a kind of loosey-goosey version of the same thing, excuse me. And they said, no way. they fixed it up, which I appreciate, because it's really important that folks understand that this is an illegal drug and there are risks involved. And so that's what we're hoping people understand going in.
But the title of the book is Have a Good Trip. It does seem to be inviting people to partake.
Yeah, it's a kind of sassy title for sure. It's what the title does is, in my view, is that it encourages people to educate themselves. There's a lot of hype about magic mushrooms, a lot of good news out there that needs to be moderated with solid information. So that's where I'm coming from. And that's where what this book is really about.
The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. If you want to call in with your questions and comments, if you have had a good trip, we'd like to hear about it. So, Eugenia, the mushrooms that are available now, are they basically the same mushrooms that I may or may not have taken back in the 70s?
Probably. However, the cultivars... So the primary psilocybin species that is consumed is called Psilocybin cubensis, which actually grows in Texas. Of the Psilocybin cubensis, there's numerous cultivars. It's sort of like they're all tomatoes, but there's cherry tomatoes and Romas, right? So the same thing is true of magic mushrooms and of these Psilocybin cubensis. But over time, people have been breeding them to be stronger and stronger. So kind of like cannabis. Yeah, they have changed in terms of potential potency.
And so there are lots of different types of magic mushrooms as well. Not all of them are psilocybin, is that right?
Well, the vast majority of psilocybin-containing mushrooms are in the psilocybin genus. There are others, but the folks that consume those mushrooms or are into those mushrooms tend to be foragers. So we really don't see them kind of coming up. They're not the subject of clinical trials or even anecdotal data and surveys, stuff like that. So really the primary psychedelic mushrooms used by people in this country are psilocybin species, primarily Psilocybin cubensis.
So there, as you write about in a book, you really get involved in these communities. And they They're very protective, and they understand what they're doing. They're not just fooling around. They have a great understanding of this these mushrooms and what they can do and how to treat them with respect. But I wonder about people who think, wow, this could help me with my anxiety. This could help me with my PTSD. This could help me with all sorts of things. And so they go online and they see, or maybe even go to a vape store, and maybe they'll find something that says it is a mushroom product, and they may try that. What are they likely going to get?
You mean at a vape store?
Yeah.
Not magic mushrooms, not mushrooms. They could be getting any number of things, from Amanita muscaria, which is a psychoactive mushroom. It's the red one with the white dots, but doesn't contain psilocybin, or any number of other synthetic psychoactive substances. I mean, who knows? It's not regulated. So you're sort of taking your mind in your own hands at that point, or letting it out of your own hands, yeah, is a way to put it. This book, and the reason why I wrote it, really addresses the folks that you're talking about, you know, like your auntie who says, well, I'm kind of curious about these mushrooms. I suffer from postpartum depression or whatever. But the information she has is limited to whatever bubble she enters in on the internet. So I try to put together a resource that is very that is well sourced and very comprehensive, in order to illustrate what these particular psychedelics, the magic mushrooms, the psilocybe species, can do, may do, perhaps might do. Because the bottom line is with these mushrooms is there are certain things that are known, certain things that are unknown, and many things that are unknowable. Like what's going to happen within an individual mind.
You take a data-driven approach in the book, as well as first-person journalism. How good is the data? The studies that are being done about magic mushrooms, are this group sizes large enough? Are we looking at issues with regard, like, well, I'm on insulin, or I have other medication issues? I mean, are we learning enough to know that how to do this safely?
We're not there yet, no. And that's one of the things I really spend a lot of time pointing out in the book. In terms of the clinical trials, what all the excitement that you're hearing about is mostly based on very small academic studies. And so they can't be extrapolated to the general public, and the public assume that they'll have the same results. There's very little studies on drug interactions. The psychopharmaceutical community, you know, these companies are attempting to use their synthetic psilocybin or psilocybin analogs in clinical trials. They are in the process. There's only one company I can think of that's in phase three. So that process is going on. We're not there yet. There's no definitive answers. And then regarding anecdotal data, there's a fair amount of large-scale anecdotal data regarding some aspects of psilocybin use, like microdosing or using them for cluster headaches. And that data, you know, has its problems because there's no controls. It's just everyone's self-reporting. But it's very interesting to researchers because they look at those large bodies of anecdotal data and they say, maybe we should design a study and see what's going on here. Beyond that, those are like my main resources that I use. But beyond that, I also synthesized smaller scale anecdotal data that I pulled from social news sites like Reddit and Shroomery, which is quite active in the psychedelic world, and as well as trip tales from many, many, many people that I interviewed. And as you mentioned, where I deemed it being helpful, my own experiences.
When you throw out there that this could be helpful with people with storm or cluster headaches. I mean, to me, anyone who has that is going to look at, could I should try this. I would try anything in order to deal with this horrible malady.
Yeah, that's exactly how the data was accumulated, because people with cluster headaches were sharing on a website called clusterbusters.com, and they were sharing, you know, their tips with each other. And at one point, they started sharing tips about using psilocybin. It's been going on actually for at least 10 years, more actually, more like 15. So then people started to try it who had cluster headaches, and then they would report whether it worked for them or what their dose was, or, you know, all the information that they had. And as a result, the researchers took a look at this anecdotal data, and they said, interesting. And that's how the science, that in that way, the people who are out there sort of, you know, risking, you know, their bodies, minds, and their, you know, legal status on trying these drugs are setting up the potential for researchers to explore further and in a more disciplined way.
We're taking a 1 minute break here. Our phone lines are open, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. If you have played around with magic mushrooms, tell us about your experience. Would you recommend it? Did this help you with other issues that you have had? Where do you think this is going? Are you suspicious of Big Pharma getting involved in the game? Give us a call. I'd love to hear your take. The book is Have a Good Trip, Exploring Magic Mushrooms Experience. We'll be right back. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Eugenia Bone is with us. She is an expert on fungi, mushrooms, and her new book is Have a Good Trip, Exploring the Magic Mushroom Experience. Well, you can go online and buy spores to grow these at home. Is that difficult?
No. The spores of the psilocybe genus are not illegal because there's no psilocybin in them. What's illegal is to germinate the spores, because once they turn into mushrooms, then the mushrooms produce the psilocybin. When you buy them online, you don't know exactly, unless you're into microscopy, you don't know exactly what you're getting, right? So it's the whole world, and anytime you have an unregulated world, there's going to be questions, and there could be bad characters involved. There's no way of knowing for sure, but there definitely are sites that are reputable and sell these spores for academic and scientific purposes, though people grow them out all the time.
So how illegal is this really? I mean, is the DEA looking for people who are growing mushrooms and using mushrooms?
So it is, as you mentioned earlier, it's illegal in the USA. However, it is legalized in some states or decriminalized and in various municipalities. I can't speak for any particular community or police department, but from what I've heard, speaking to law enforcement, they're not so interested in pursuing people who are taking magic mushrooms because, for whatever reason, gangs aren't really involved in them. They don't tend to lead to a criminality like, I don't know.
Are they addictive?
They're not considered addictive. However, you can develop a tolerance to them, which is something that microdosers, people who take small amounts of the drug on a schedule, have to be aware of or are aware of. Over time, they can become less effective.
Okay, let's go to a caller, and we have Robert. And Robert, you're on the air.
Yes, I have to say that I think this program and programs like it are absolutely disgusting, because we are going into a society where we're discussing drug use rather than beneficial, positive activities. People go to school these days. What is school? It's drugs, sex, alcohol, and sports. When I went to school, you went to school so you could learn something and do something and be productive in your life. Now, that's when you start talking about how to use drugs and which drugs are good for you, which that's out.
All right. Robert, we got you. Thank you for calling in. We'd love to hear from you. Eugenia, tell me about, Robert's view on that. It's like we are disgusting. We're telling people to use drugs. That's not what I'm thinking I'm doing. I'm thinking I'm telling people to be careful. But go ahead.
Yeah, that's 100% it. You know, if people are using these drugs, and there's been a lot of hype about their potential to mitigate various mental illnesses like depression and PTSD and OCD and anorexia nervosa. You know, when you have folks who are frustrated that the drugs that are currently on the market aren't helping them, then they're going to look elsewhere. That's happening. What my book tries to do, and I think this conversation, David, is about, is to say, you know something about what's going on. You know, learn about as much as you can about these mushrooms before you say, I'm going to go ahead and try them. So it's an educational approach rather than an advocacy approach.
Let's go to the caller, David. And David, you're on the air.
Hello. Thank you guys for taking my call. Real quickly, I wanted to say, number one, I'm hugely passionate about the topic and have been for decades. And I really appreciate the accuracy, at least according to what I know, of the guest's information, number one. And secondly, that comes back to the most important thing, I think, of all, which is transparency of truthful, scientific, however you want to phrase it, academically correct information is the key to all of these things. Even our friend Robert, who just called, the cluster headaches example you gave is a perfect example. If those people weren't transparent with the success they're having with something that they get could get them in trouble legally, then we wouldn't know that could potentially be a pathway to relief of a horrible pain that they have. And so I really think transparency on, again, the spores. What spores do you order to get what you're looking for? Well, the answer is transparency. So I really think, again, thank you so much for having this topic, for the presenters for being open to this, and, again, the guests for delivering truly accurate information.
David, thank you for the call. I did get an email from a listener citing his concerns, saying there's age-related risk, worried about what this would mean for people who are young. As we know, the developing brain. Are there concerns with that?
Well, first of all, I want to thank the caller and say I 100% agree that transparency is key to a full understanding, or the fullest possible understanding, of what these drugs can and can't do. Regarding age-related studies, there are very, very few. In fact, I'm going to be a senior citizen next month, and there is like zilch on, older people and psychedelics. Like, how does it affect us differently?
Yeah, I was worrying about that as I was reading it, and then I read your epilogue, and I thought, well, maybe this is the right thing.
Well, it's curious, but there isn't, that's nobody's fault. It's nobody's fault that we don't know what the effects of this drug might be on a young brain. It's just, we're not there yet. Everyone is so eager to get the information, but it's just as important to realize where we are in time with this research. And to be patient, to allow science to do its work, pay attention to the limitations of science. That it just, it takes time.
Now the caller, let's go to Rob. And Rob, you're on the air.
Thank you so much for having this topic, and thanks to the VA for their research on ethnogens, the hallucinogens, if you will. I would like to ask, from my own research, I've noticed that there's a lack of a clinical effect at usual doses in patients that take SSRIs and other reuptake inhibitors. Is this something that's been borne out in your research?
Thank you, caller. Thank you, Rob.
Yeah, it's a great question. So there's not, like, there's some hypotheses about that. I spoke with one wonderful migraine researcher at Yale, Dr. Schindler was her name. And she said that what they think might, what might be happening when people who have a history of taking SSRIs or are currently on SSRIs, what they're doing is they're increasing the stimulation to serotonin receptors on neural cells in the brain. When that patient takes psilocybin, it increases the excitation of those serotonin receptors, which in effect creates a kind of overload, and the serotonin receptors simply shut. They just close up. And that's why people, that is hypothetically, why people who have a history of taking SSRIs might have a problem feeling the effects of psilocybin.
Where do you think we'll be in the short term, 5 years, 10 years, with understanding and having access to psilocybin mushrooms as for therapy and for recreational use?
Well, in terms of the studies that are going on, and I think it's the pharmaceutical companies that are kind of leading the way. The academic studies are important, and they're also inspiring. But it's the pharmaceutical companies that are really dumping the money into it and trying to figure it out post haste. The FDA just issued guidelines on what their expectations are for a approval of a psilocybin analog drug. And that is a step ahead from the perspective of the pharmaceutical companies. My guess is in time, they will make some breakthroughs, but it's going to it takes many years to develop a drug. And this one is particularly tricky because of its, because it just, it presents so differently in different people.
So why should we wait? Why should we wait that long for them to get their act together when I can just buy it online somewhere?
Well, lots of people don't wait. And that's why I wrote the book. You know? So if they're not going to wait, then at least they can maybe judge their risks or learn how to evaluate a retreat. You know, there's these retreats in Oregon and in Costa Rica and Jamaica and the Netherlands where people go for psychedelics.
And you went to Mexico. Can I do that too?
No, I didn't go to Mexico. I went to Jamaica.
Oh.
Mexico is a little bit tricky because in Mexico, it's only allowed as part of a religious ceremony. So for people who are planning to go for like therapeutic reasons, it's, I don't know, it's not the same.
There's a lot in this book. It's all fun and interesting, and it's important if you're thinking about using magic mushrooms. The author is Eugenia Bone. She knows what she's talking about. Have a good trip exploring the magic mushroom experience. It was so good to talk to you today.
Thanks, David. I really enjoyed it. Thank you.
That's The Source on Texas Public Radio. Thanks for listening.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted and produced by David Martin Davies. Kayla Padilla is our booking and engagement producer. Engineering support from Ruben Garcia, Jesse Reeves, and Steve Short. Dan Katz is TPR's Vice President of News. The Source is made possible with support from the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.